WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Matt Piper. We are hearing from the top U.S. negotiators of the Israel-Hamas peace plan for the first time. President Trump's Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff and his son-in-law Jared Kushner. They are dealmakers who came up through the world of New York real estate. They spoke to our Leslie Stahl for tonight's 60 Minutes.
Hamas's worst nightmare in the deal would be that Israel withdrew to the agreed-upon line. Hamas released all the hostages. And then once that occurred, Israel just resumed the war and went back to going after them.
To reassure Hamas, President Trump gave Kushner and Witkoff permission to talk directly with the terrorists, a big break with diplomatic protocol. On October 8th, the two landed in Egypt to deliver a message from President Trump to Al-Haya, Hamas's top negotiator.
The president said, "We will stand behind this deal. We will not allow the terms of this deal for any party to be violated.
And both sides will be treated fairly."
But the ceasefire showed signs of strain this weekend, with Israel launching strikes into Gaza after saying Hamas killed two of its soldiers. Loss at the Louvre. Thieves steal what the famed Paris Museum calls priceless jewels in a raid that lasted just minutes. And no one's been caught.
It sounds like the plot of a heist movie. Thieves break into the Louvre in broad daylight and vanish with priceless Napoleon-era jewels. But Aaron Thompson, a professor of art crime at the City University of New York, says this kind of theft isn't rare.
If you go in the middle of the day, there's lots of confused tourists to act as cover while you're running away.
She says jewelry is a prime target, not for its history, but for its melt value.
Because you can melt down the metal and recut the stones, and then those pieces just disappear.
Mike Murillo for CBS News, Washington.
Millions in the East are on alert for severe storms, including possible tornadoes. CBS News meteorologist Andrew Kozak.
It's the same front that delivered severe weather to the Mid-South. It's losing a little bit of steam tonight, but still 62 million people under a marginal risk of severe weather. And within that, we have about a 2% chance for tornadoes there. That will include areas like New Jersey, Philadelphia, and New York City.
Fresh off his release from prison after President Trump commuted his sentence on Friday, disgraced former Rep. George Santos tells CNN he's focused on the future, whether or not he's liked by society.
There's always going to be critics. People are going to like me. People are going to hate me. It doesn't matter whoever gets clemency in the future or whoever that person might be. I'm pretty confident if President Trump had pardoned Jesus Christ off the cross, he would have had critics. So that's just the reality of our country.
And though he owed $400,000 in restitution to his fraud victims, he now won't have to pay it. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive. See why over 43 million drivers trust Progressive to stay protected on the road. See for yourself at progressive.com.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 93.5 The Tap.
The Packers beat the Cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Arizona, where the Green Bay Packers held on to win 27-23 over the Cardinals. The road trip began with a five-hour flight delay when the team plane had mechanical problems on the ground in Green Bay. Matt LaFleur.
From the moment we got on the trip, nothing seemed to go right to in game. There was a lot of things that didn't go right, but the guys kept battling, and that's what it takes in this league.
Packers running back Josh Jacobs had 13 carries for 55 yards, scoring twice, including the winning touchdown, despite dealing with the flu and a calf injury.
They really didn't really want me to play today. It was one of them things where I kind of had to convince them. You also got to know who you're talking to. I'm one of them guys, man, if I feel like I can spin and I'm not going to hurt the team by the time I, play, then I'm going to go out there and give it everything I got.
College football, the Badgers losing to Ohio State 34-0. A report says if Wisconsin decides to fire Luke Fickell, they would owe the coach $25 million in a contract buyout. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the upper 30s. Rainy and blustery for Monday. Winds could gust to 30 out of the south. Highs around 60 degrees. Monday night, rain likely. Lows around 40 degrees. Tuesday, rainy, breezy, and 46.
Currently, 42 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow. On Monday, author Laura Bird will tell us about not one, but two upcoming book festivals around Wisconsin, what they're about, and why you might like to check one out.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Nobody had to tell your grandparents not to drive while using their typewriters. Why should it be any different for us kids and our cell phones? Distracted driving was the cause of more than 3,000 deaths in 2022. Come on, we're smarter than this. Let's put down the phones and focus on the roads. Drive safe, everybody.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It should not be a partisan question as to how the National Guard is being deployed. That should be extremely concerning to Republicans of good faith right alongside Democrats. If you scrub it of the partisanship, the facts are not disputable. You have flouting of court orders and a political use of the National Guard, two things which no American should ever be okay with.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for matinee
You're
on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pat, go. Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday afternoon. We've made it through another week of utter lawlessness and chaos.
Of America in 2025, right, Maggie?
Yes. And that fine voice is my frequent guest, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. He hosts the program Amicus or Amicus. Choose your pick. Both are completely acceptable pronunciations from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays across the network. Welcome back, Jim.
Maggie, always a pleasure to be with you, even in a week like this. Rule of law tested, justice tested, so many things. As always, it's a lot. It's not great to be with you once again to talk through all of that.
Yes, indeed. A couple bits of breaking news, and then I will turn to my now daily shutdown update. Mm-hmm. This broke quite a bit earlier today. The New York chapter of the Young Republicans, which was being led by one of these, I think the guy's 35, 36 years old, one of these adults, new generation of leaders, one of these guys in this text exchange that was just vile and absolutely abhorrent. So that's happening, I guess, on the plus side of the column. Also, a little bit closer to home here, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, their chancellor announced today that the UW-Platteville Baraboo Sauk County campus will be ceasing operations effective May 22nd, 2026, so next year. It will not impact in-person degree instructional programs at the main Platteville campus. So that interesting in this continued, I'm just going to say, attacks on higher education and education writ large. I saw some reporting earlier this week that said now University of Wisconsin system colleges and programs are among the more expensive. It used to be exactly the opposite here in the state of Wisconsin. That, of course, all due to the concerted multi-decade-long efforts by Republicans, specifically a particular pet project, the defunding of public education of the Koch brothers. That has always been one of them now deceased, but a lot of their foundation's expenditures into these 501c4s and 501c3s has really been about defunding public education at all levels. We're seeing the results of much of that at primary, secondary, elementary education here in the state of Wisconsin. Also, some updates. This is from the Harvard Business School. They just put out a study. It's titled Tracking the Short-Term Price Impact of U.S. Tariffs. The link to that will be in our show notes for today, as well as the chart that sort of summarizes this pretty technical paper that I took some time today to take a peek at. Here's the big shocker, everybody. Prices for pretty much everything have gone up since the tariff terror.
Who would have anticipated that?
I know,
right?
It's really right. Weird when those pesky economists are right. Here's what the headline after when factoring slowing price increases before March of this year, again, a lot of that work, frankly, tied back to the Biden administration, the 4% jump on imported good prices since then is expected to climb to at least 5.4%. Prices on domestic goods would rise from 2.6% from 2%. So, yeah, the tariffs are adding to our inflation problems. If you don't believe me or the Harvard Business School or, you know, basically any economist worth their measure, the Wall Street Journal, also headline news, this week, just 2 days ago, grocery prices keep rising. And they've got a handy little chart there. And despite all of this, and you know how Republicans always, they use the word socialism and government intervention and markets and business. This is terrible. Free market. All that's, of course, nonsense. Because guess what? Donald Trump is going to set price floors across unnamed industries to combat China. This, according to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. Also, he noted this week that the administration may try to take equity stakes in more companies. Yeah, that's literally government takeover of markets and businesses.
It is.
Sure sounds like socialism to me, Jim. Mm. Who are the socialists these days?
Right.
It's pretty truly stunning. The two talking out of both sides of their mouths. Before we get to the shutdown update, I also, Jim, and everybody out there, I wanted to do what I'm going to now call the President of Peace update.
Ah, okay. Here we go.
Because, yeah. There was absolutely an extraordinary moment yesterday in the Oval Office. Donald Trump had spoken to Vladimir Putin on the phone, I believe earlier yesterday. And what he basically admitted, and you can see his advisors behind him sort of like, oh, God, don't say what you're saying. He admits that Putin told him, do not give Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Now, Donald Trump just about a month ago said, especially when, you know, he was ticked off at Putin for that hot second, he said he was going to give the Tomahawks to Ukraine. Here's Donald Trump telling all of us that Putin said, no, don't do that. Take a listen to this. Cut 67.
I did actually say, would you mind if I gave a couple of thousand Tomahawks to your opposition? I did say that to him. I said it just that way. He didn't like the idea. He really didn't like the idea. No, I said it that way. You have to be a little bit lighthearted sometimes, but no, he doesn't want Tomahawk is a vicious weapon. It's a vicious, offensive, incredibly destructive weapon. Nobody wants Tomahawk shot at him.
Did he ask you not to provide Tomahawks?
So, wouldn't anybody? I mean, it's been in the news. Who wouldn't do that? CNN. Who wouldn't do that? You know? Do you think he's going to say, I'd love to have Tomahawk sent my way? I don't think so.
And then moments later, I could have almost chalked that up to Trump being kind of a little cheeky about things. But the substance of what he's saying is, I talked with Vladimir Putin, who runs, just let's be clear, an authoritarian state that is an enemy of the United States. Vladimir Putin told me, like, don't give those tomahawks to Ukraine. And then Donald Trump admitted, apparently based on that request from Putin, that he's not going to give tomahawk missiles to Ukraine because we need them more. Listen.
About the tomahawk missiles, did you discuss?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, didn't say much, but I do say to you, you know, we need tomahawks for the United States of America, too. We have a lot of them, but we need them. I mean, we can't deplete for our country. So, you know, they're very vital. They're very powerful. They're very accurate. They're very good. But we need them, too. So I don't know what we can do about that.
Where do you start with that, Maggie, right? What are the seven things that are wrong with what we just heard between those two cuts? Again, this is a man, again, making cavalier statements, cheeky, absolutely, cavalier statements about war, people dying, and the legitimacy of a republic that, at least up until now, has sort of been our ally over there. We're making fun of all this, and then we're indicating we need it. You know, I think about Portland. I think about Chicago. What is he talking about? Where are we going to be using these weapons, right?
I mean, my take is pretty basic. Trump gets on the phone with former KGB official, spy extraordinaire, now dictator, authoritarian in Russia, and Russian President Putin says, don't send tomahawks to Ukraine. And Donald Trump says, okay, I won't do that.
Right, right.
So to continue with the President of Peace update, I don't know if this is directly related, but it's somewhat. He's announced, and the New York Times reported this week, that he's considering an overhaul of our refugee system to favor white refugees. So, yep, President of Peace there. That's, of course, on top of the H-1B visa sales for $100,000 apiece. Of course, you all heard this week that he's authorized covert CIA action against Venezuela. Striking another Venezuelan boat, but apparently it wasn't just Venezuelans this week, and two people survived, you know, President of Peace type stuff. They continue to attack President Nicolas Maduro. I'm no fan of that man. But again, all of this is fig leaf cover so that he's not actually committing war crimes by using the military to bomb. Okay, let's just assume they're criminal vessels in the Caribbean. That's a war crime if they're not actually enemy combatants. And this, Trump said today that Israel will, said Israel will resume fighting in Gaza, quote, as soon as I say the word, end quote, because there have been reports in recent days of clashes that continue between Hamas and Palestinian gangs or clans reportedly backed by Israel. What? And Israel confirmed that it carried out an August 28th attack strike in Yemen.
It's breathtaking, right?
In
its recklessness, the disclosures of these things, these should be matters handled at the State Department, obviously in the West Wing there. They're highly, highly sensitive. And again, the fate of not only our nation, people in places across the globe, and this man hears something and it becomes his musings. Yes, at the top of the list, absolutely. I've been just told by an autocratic leader not to do something, so I'm going to do it. But all of this is not the way a president behaves. And it's not just because that's tradition. It's because all of us should expect more for our own safety and security from this man.
It's
right?
ridiculous.
Right?
Also, all of the reporting this week that basically Donald Trump and his allies had convinced Netanyahu to not accept effectively the same terms that Trump proposed to end this war when Biden proposed them so that Trump could run on the issue and Biden would be hurt by some of the left-leaning factions within the Democratic Party. Yeah, all of that coming out this week. So, President of Peace. And just in case anyone had any doubt about his deservedness as the title of President of Peace, Donald Trump made this statement yesterday in the Oval Office that nobody's been ending anybody any wars but me. No president ever, not ever. Take a listen to this nonsense.
He's talking about the whole President Zelensky tomorrow.
It just seems to me that, you know, look, it's only a field. That's all I've done in my whole life. I've made deals. I know about deals. I do it well. I don't think any president's ever ended a war, frankly. One war. I did eight of them, Maria, right? And but I don't know, did Bush ever end? Do you think Biden ended a war? Biden started wars because he was stupid. But do you think Biden ended any wars? No. I don't know of anybody that ended wars. I ended eight of them. Now it's going to be nine. I think we're going to have this one done hopefully soon.
What hogwash. And I just want to take a couple corrections that I appreciate from our texters. I said socialism. No, that's not really what government takeovers of businesses, claiming equity stakes and putting price floors on certain products is. That would be communism. But again, Most GOPers don't actually know the difference between the two things. Jim and I are going to take a break. I'm going to be right back. We're going to dive into these insane legal cases this week. The contempt motions, the flouting of court orders. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and me, Maggie Dawn, your lawyer friend on the radio, continue with that discussion next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Maybe what's happening at the school board needs to be disrupted.
Jim Santel and Joan Esposito, the Wisconsin teacher losing their job because of a social media post. The teacher's tweet disrupted the district's operations.
Judge says that overcomes the right of the teacher to speak publicly.
What if this were 60 years ago and she were putting up a post about desegregating the school?
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Matt Nair on air.
Hi, it's Jane Matt Nair.
Hi, it's Greg Bach.
I'm Calvin.
Join us weekdays 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network for Matt Nair on air.
We cover all the news that directly affects us as Wisconsinites.
And we lighten things up in hour number two with a segment called Audio Sorbet, and this shouldn't be a thing. We hope you can join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire's real news and great conversation, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I might save my shutdown update. Suffice it to say, Magic Mike, Jack Hole Johnson, Marionette Mike had a really bad day in the media yesterday. And I mean, really bad day. And I kind of want to do that all in one batch, but it's incredibly important for us to get to what is happening in some of these court cases, especially the court cases that involve the deployment of troops in our cities. Because over this past week, there were just some, and starting last week, Jim, there were just some extraordinary court rulings. And it is just breaking now that the Trump administration is appealing the decision yesterday from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, our own home circuit court, found that there's no rebellion and that protests, even if they include sporadic violence, don't constitute a rebellion. This isn't shocking. And now Donald Trump is asking the Supreme Court to intervene here. It's pretty scary stuff that we're in. And the case about the National Guard deployments in Illinois, Jim, is probably the most notable, but within the last week and a half, there have been at least two federal courts that have concluded that Donald Trump violated specific restraining orders that prohibited the Trump administration from doing certain things. We'll get to those, but let's start with this case about the deployment. And Jim, I'm going to read for everyone, and then I want to get your reaction to the Seventh Circuit's incredibly matter-of-fact language.
Not mincing words at all, right?
No,
right,
and right, it's just so straightforward. Yes. And I want to get your reaction to that. Here's the Seventh Circuit yesterday. Again, this is the case brought by Governor Pritzker to stop Donald Trump's deployment of National Guard troops in Illinois. Separately, we will also get into the fact that the Department of Homeland Security and ICE officials continue to lie and manufacture propaganda to try to scare Americans into agreeing with these Gestapo-like tactics that have now snared some 170-plus U.S. citizens and who have seized and disappeared and have slated for deportation of the entire population of people that they're taking. Most estimates, most watchers think that over 60% of those people have no criminal record at all. So it's exactly what he didn't say he was going to do. Here's the Seventh Circuit, though. Let's start with this. Although we substantially agree with the definition of rebellion set forth by the district court in the California case, we emphasize that the critical analysis of a rebellion centers on the nature of the resistance to governmental authority. Political opposition is not rebellion. A protest does not become a rebellion merely because the protesters advocate for legal or policy changes, are well organized, call for significant changes to the structure of U.S. government, use civil disobedience as a form of protest, or exercise their Second Amendment right to carry firearms as the law currently allows. Nor does a protest become a rebellion merely because of sporadic and isolated incidents of unlawful activity or even violence committed by rogue participants in the protest. Such conduct exceeds the scope of the First Amendment, of course, and law enforcement has apprehended the perpetrators accordingly. But because rebellions at least use deliberate, organized violence to resist governmental authority, the problematic incidents in this record clearly fall within the considerable daylight between protected speech and a rebellion. Applying our understanding of rebellion to the district court's factual findings, and even after affording great deference to the president's evaluation of the circumstances, we see insufficient evidence of a rebellion or danger of rebellion in Illinois. The spirited, sustained, and occasionally violent actions of demonstrators in protest of the federal government's immigration policies and actions, without more, does not give rise to a danger of rebellion against the government's authority. The administration thus has not demonstrated that it is likely to succeed on this issue. That language was endorsed by two Republican-appointed judges, one appointed by Donald Trump himself during his first administration, the other appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush. Jim, your reactions, we got about a minute, and then we'll go to the phones on the other side, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Your reactions to that,
It is decisive. It's clear. This is not a court that's even saying, you know, there are things on the other side we should talk about, but in the end, we balance. Not even close. Political opposition is not rebellion, Mr. President. And you've got appeals court judges, as you said, from all perspectives on the bench saying just that. We've got them. We know about Judge Imbrogate also, obviously in Portland. Yes. Same kind of thing coming from this basic definition and saying, no, knock it off. Stop it. And again, the president has a right to appeal these things. This should not be appealed. This is a basic statement about how we live and work in America. Good for the Supreme Court to say just that.
Well, not the Supreme Court, Seventh Circuit. And he is appealing it, of course.
Yep.
We'll see what the knee benders to an authoritarian president do when the Supreme Court decides what to do with the emergency appeal. We're going to take your calls and thoughts on the other side. We're going to dig into these other complete flouting of court orders by the Trump administration next. 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire's real news and great conversation.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
CBS News Brief. The truce in Gaza is strained after Israel alleged Hamas violated the ceasefire and hit back with air and artillery strikes. Vice President Vance talked about the peace plan tonight.
We think that it has the best chance for a sustainable peace, but even if it does that, it's going to have hills and valleys, and we're going to have to monitor the situation.
Vance said he or another member of the administration would likely travel to Israel this week. With the government shutdown about to enter day 20, the governor of Colorado's office says 600,000 people there could see their SNAP food assistance benefits affected. Aaron Pulling is CEO of Food Bank of the Rockies.
These folks are working really, really hard and still not able to make ends meet.
Thieves used power tools to steal some of France's priceless crown jewels from the Louvre in a quick daytime heist, BBC's Hugh Schofield tells us.
It's interesting that they've left investigation in the hands of the organized crime unit. So that suggests that they reckon this is a big job organized by big criminals.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
The Packers beat the Cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Arizona, where the Green Bay Packers held on to win 27-23 over the Cardinals. The road trip began with a five-hour flight delay when the team plane had mechanical problems on the ground in Green Bay. Matt LaFleur.
From the moment we got on the trip, nothing seemed to go right to in game. There was a lot of things that didn't go right, but the guys kept battling, and that's what it takes in this league.
Packers running back Josh Jacobs had 13 carries for 55 yards, scoring twice, including the winning touchdown, despite dealing with the flu and a calf injury.
They really didn't really want me to play today. It was one of them things where I kind of had to convince them. You also got to know who you're talking to. I'm one of them guys, man, if I feel like I can spin and I'm not going to hurt the team by trying to, play, then I'm going to go out there and give it everything I got.
College football, the Badgers losing to Ohio State 34-0. A report says if Wisconsin decides to fire Luke Fickle, they would owe the coach $25 million in a contract buyout. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. If you're looking for a more efficient way to watch TV, this might be a deal for you. You can now bundle Apple TV with Peacock. Apple TV is already ad-free, but if you pair it with Peacock Premium Plus, which is Peacock's version of ad-free, it will cost you $19.99 a month. That's barely a savings from current prices, but if you go with the ad-supported Peacock, you can get both platforms for $14.99. Apple TV right now is currently $12.99, so that's not a bad deal, if you don't mind a few ads. It was pretty much a given Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl, was going to break records. According to Variety, Showgirl sold 4 million units in its first week. The old record was 3.5 million units for a week, which was previously held by Adele, according to Billboard. Swift also set a record, now having the most number one solo albums, breaking a tie she held with Jay-Z and Drake. She trails only the Beatles, who hold the record for all artists with 19 number one albums. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the upper 30s. Rainy and blustery for Monday. Winds could gust to 30 out of the south. Highs around 60 degrees. Monday night, rain likely. Lows around 40 degrees. Tuesday, rainy, breezy, and 46.
It's 39 at our studios.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Paul Jaconi Berry and Sean Hannish back with another great Wisconsin sports film. No Packers, no life.
Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and said, you got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. This movie is just such a great opportunity to really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan. It is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Maggie Dawn.
I'm joined by my special guest, Tom Paulsiewicz. We dive into Donald Trump's plan to dispatch the IRS against his enemies and Magic Mike's refusal to seat the newest elected congresswoman. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. There's been so much action in our federal courts, it is nearly impossible to keep track of. I know I now need both hands and both feet to count the number of times, and probably Jim's hands and feet as well, to count the number of times a federal court has concluded that the Trump administration is flouting their orders. There were a couple of cases just this past week. But Jim, I wanted to give our listeners a chance to weigh in on this very clear point made by the Seventh Circuit. Protesting the government is not a rebellion. And if there is not a meaningful distinction between the two of those things, then there is no First Amendment.
Absolutely. And
it's the quite whole, simple.
The whole concept behind the First Amendment, all these cases out there from past Supreme Courts have said that we tolerate not only criticism of the government, but we encourage it in appropriate circumstances. You can say things in the public domain that will be unpopular, that will be offensive, all kinds of things. That's what the First Amendment. There are limits, absolutely. No defamation. You can't incite violence, all kinds of conditions on it. The First Amendment, this core fundamental notion, the president basically equating saying things out loud with insurrection, with rebellion, not even close. And again, the decisiveness of the Seventh Circuit, right?
Yeah, equating showing up en masse the streets.
With a sign.
With a sign to a rebellion.
Right.
Our founding fathers would literally
recoil
turn over in their graves.
In horror, absolutely.
The other thing that I want to point out before we go to the phones, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Remember, women, vets, conservatives, and first-time callers go to the front of the line. There was also a very weird moment yesterday in the Oval Office where Trump admits that he never said during his campaign that he was going to sick the military and the National Guard on citizens that might protest his policies, that this is going far, far farther than what he intended. And if you listen closely to what he says, he basically says that this is Stephen Miller's thing, that this is about his truest feelings, and that he almost implies that, like, he's holding Stephen Miller back. It is really creepy. The upshot of this is basically the president going, like, yeah, I'm just letting this guy over here turn the First Amendment on its head, abuse our National Guard. This is not what these folks who volunteer to help defend our country from foreign enemies and help with domestic natural disasters. It's not what they signed up to do. Listen to this. It is really creepy.
I didn't realize I was going to make this such a big factor in the I didn't really campaign. I campaigned on crime, but I never thought we'd go into every city and take a really safe city that we've all been living with for years and make them safe. And now it's like a passion for me, and it's a passion for the people behind me. So I didn't get elected. I did get elected for crime, but I didn't get elected for what we're doing. This is many, many steps above. And I want to thank Stephen Miller, who's right back in the audience right there. I'd love to have him. I love watching him on television. I'd love to have him come up and explain his true feelings. But maybe not his truest feelings. That might be going a little bit too far.
Stephen Miller has an office, right?
Yeah. I didn't get elected for what we're doing. This is many levels above that. And I want to just point this out. There are news agencies, including ProPublica. We're going to put in our show notes the article that they just published. 170 citizens detained, held incommunicado, some for more than one day, meaning they're not allowed to contact family or lawyers. Many of their family members couldn't find where they are. The vast majority of these people were saying, I'm a citizen, producing real ID or whatever it is. The ICE agents laughing at them, violently detained a huge proportion of them. And meanwhile, the biggest political ad spender this year is DHS. They've spent $51 million on propaganda. And another fact-checking organization found out that this crapola being pumped out by the White House and DHS that showed this like very scary video montage of Chicago and how lawless and out of control it was. It's a fake. That video was littered with old footage that was about drug busts. So old footage that has nothing to do with what's going on, again, about drug busts, and was from deportation raids in other states, including specifically Florida, Texas, South Carolina, and Nebraska, GOP states. So they're lying about this all the time. Here we've got the Seventh Circuit saying even incidental violence when masses of people are exercising their First Amendment rights, this is not a rebellion. Trump admitting this isn't what he got elected to do, but oh yeah, that's Stephen Miller. We don't want him to tell anybody what he actually thinks. What?
And if Mr. President, if you have in your brain some second thoughts, which maybe arguably you're hinting at there, that this has gone too far, you are the president of the United States of America. You are Stephen Miller's boss. You're the president of this nation. You tell your agencies, your law enforcement agencies, Justice Department, Homeland Security, knock it off. We're pulling back. We're
knock
not doing
it
this.
Off.
And you do that right away, and it becomes effective the next moment you say it. You've got that power.
But Jim, you keep saying these things like Donald Trump is rational,
right,
and like this
right,
is normal,
that's
and
the
that
problem.
He's actually trying to be a president for right. all Americans when he's not.
Right.
I just want to point out this last thing, then we're going to go to the phones, 855-752-4842. There is a psychological phenomena that is called secondary delusions, which means you come up with this set of beliefs that explain the primary delusion, like this primary unreal thing that you seize onto. And you see this constantly in MAGA. You see it from the president himself. And this is, I think Trump is experiencing this. He's not trying to fact check anything that Stephen Miller or anybody else is telling him. He just assumes that all of this is true because he doesn't know how to actually ask any probing questions. He doesn't really care about the facts. What he cares about is own political power and influence. And this is where, like, Stephen Miller spewing all of this nonsense into the president's ear, 4,000 murders in Chicago, shows him videos of Portland burning down. No, it's people in frog outfits, like, singing songs. We got the raging grannies here in Wisconsin. And that creates this primary delusion of the out-of-control cities, right? And then that's supported by the propaganda machine, the $51 million spent by DHS on propaganda. And then the secondary delusion is about explaining and propping up that primary delusion, right? And in this case, it's that the delusion of the chaos or these out-of-control cities, that this is explainable through this weird assumption of some kind of bizarre conspiracy about Antifa and Tren de Agua and Marxists and whatever, Democrat, who knows? But you can see this thing, and it sort of ends up feeding itself constantly, right? And you can't get rid of the primary delusion because now you're buying into the secondary illusion and the things feed each other. And you've got a propaganda machine, which includes OAN and Fox News and all righty-whitey talk radio, just continuously feeding this delusion loop. And it becomes self-reinforcing. And it's why, even when presented with facts, those that are deluded can't actually engage with them. They'll revert back to like the platitudes and the, if this is unsafe, it's about stopping crime. No, it's not. Donald Trump doesn't know a thing about stopping crime. Stephen Miller doesn't know a thing about stopping crime. J.D. Vance doesn't know anything about stopping. They've never done any of that. So that's something I think it's really key for people to keep in mind. I have found it nearly impossible to argue with folks from the right that are diehard for Trump because I can't get them down to any factual level. Because to do so is pulling out one of the major support beams for the entire worldview. And if you do that, the entire thing starts crumbling. And that's just psychologically not something most people's brains will allow them to do because it threatens your psychological existential self. So it's easier to stick with the delusion than it is to grapple with the contrary facts. And we see that every day out of the Oval Office in particular.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Jim, please.
No, I'm simply going to reaffirm that fundamental notion. We see it in courts. We see it outside of courts as well. The reliance, we've got to be able to rely upon some core facts. And we can dispute what we do about those, how we respond to those. That's what good government's all about, legislative
right.
debate. But again, that notion of cracking through that facade, if you say, as you say, of delusion, that's the problem.
It's really, really difficult. And again, the arguments don't work particularly well. Let's go to the phones. Carmela from Milwaukee. Hi, friend. How are you? Say hi to Jim. What you
hey,
got for
Carmela,
us?
Hey, Carmela. How are you?
Hi, very well. Hi, Maggie. Hi, Jim. Well, I have two questions, but of course I have thousands of questions, but...
We all have lots of questions, Carmela.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's mind-boggling, but why isn't the international courts, and I can't remember, is it just called international courts? Why aren't they indicting Trump? I don't know. Would it be war crimes or what he's doing, killing people outside of the U.S.? But that was my first question.
What's
and
your second question?
Was,
yep, go ahead.
Is the federal judges, when they go against Trump, why there are no consequences, nothing happens. So is there a way that they can force the hand? I don't know. I'm confused by that, and I think it might have something to do with the Supreme Court giving him pretty much immunity.
That's a lot of it, right?
So very quickly, there are two primary international courts. There's the International Criminal Court, and there's the International Court of Justice. The International Court of Justice generally deals with disputes between nation states. Okay, or actors that act as if they are nation states. The International Criminal Court literally deals with war crimes. Now, I could spend 2 hours with Jim talking about the origins of the International Criminal Court, but suffice it to say, a lot of it was because of U.S. initiatives following World War II, also in responses to genocide in the former Yugoslavia, in various places in Eastern Europe, as well as Africa. The U.S. helped bring war criminals to trial at The Hague. Coming from that, they created the International Criminal Court. Now, would it surprise anyone that the U.S. has now backed away from, does not support, and will not participate in the International Criminal Court? That is the answer to question number one. Question number two, Carmela, Jim and I are going to talk about on the other side after we take care of some messages, but let's squeeze in a couple more calls. Mark from Prairie du Sac, go ahead, sir.
It seems... You know, for Stephen Miller, it seems like he's lived in a right-wing echo chamber for his entire life, that he's never really had any real-world experience other than working for right-wingers, and he just feeds on hatred. And for Donald Trump, I mean, what next? Donald Trump is going to decide we'll give Alaska back to Putin because Putin just asks for it?
Yeah, where's the line?
Right, what next indeed, Mark? Right, what next indeed?
We got to take care of some messages. We'll come back, talk about these court orders that are being flouted right and left by the Trump.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Did the average S&P 500 CEOs earn in less than 2 days what their typical worker earned in all of 2023? Yes. In 2023, the average S&P 500 CEO earned about $17 million, or about $46,849 per day, compared to under $64,000 per year for the average worker. Median figures were similar. CEOs made $16.3 million, while median workers earned about $81,000, equivalent to less than 2 days of CEO pay. High CEO compensation remains a stark contrast to the modest worker earnings across major U.S. companies. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced, also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, I promised you that Jim and I would present to you two cases that within the past week have had to have emergency hearing. One of these cases has an emergency hearing that is starting in 8 minutes in San Francisco. And these hearings have been about what? A court issuing an order that says Trump administration stop doing X. And then the Trump administration the very next day still doing X. The one I want to start with, because something just happened in the case moments ago, is a case that was filed in the Northern District of California that challenges the Russell Vogt, author of Project 2025, Heritage Foundation billionaire lackey, head of the Office of Management and Budget, Trump guy, who has been firing all of these federal employees during the shutdown. Okay. The court on just 2 days ago, so on Wednesday, the judge hearing that case issued a ruling on Wednesday that said you have to stop doing that. You cannot continue to fire people based on this. This is false assertion that the shutdown enables you or requires you to do so. She wrote this. What the judge did, what is becoming clear is that rifts during a government shutdown are not ordinary rifts. Based on the record before the court, some employees do not even know if they're being laid off because the RIF notices were sent to government email accounts and furloughed employees may not have those. It is far from normal for an administration to fire line-level civilian employees during a government shutdown as a way to punish the opposing political party. But this is precisely what President Trump has announced he is doing by taking to social media on the second day of the shutdown to post, quote, I have a meeting today with Russ Vogt, he of Project 2025 fame, to determine which of the many Democrat agencies, most of which are a political scam, he recommends to be cut. I can't believe radical left Democrats gave me this unprecedented opportunity. The judge continues, the memorandum from the OMB that appears to have initiated the shutdown rifts says the same. She went on to say, if what plaintiffs allege is true, then the agency's actions in laying off thousands of public employees during a government shutdown and targeting those firings at programs that are perceived as favored by a political party is the epitome of hasty, arbitrary, and capricious decision-making. In addition, plaintiffs are likely to succeed on their claim that the firings rest on illegal grounds. She actually pointed this out as well. During that hearing on Wednesday, she said, at the hearing, counsel for the administration refused to answer the question of whether or not defendants' actions are legal, instead saying that the defendants were not prepared to enter to address the merits today. Holy cow. I mean, my goodness. So just earlier today, the Trump administration vowed to comply with the judge's order, but failed to submit any details. And other officials acknowledged that longstanding firing plans may continue to go on. Jim, this is so bad.
It is in so many ways. And this is, again, Susan Ilston goes on to say that the laws don't apply to them anymore. It's your point, obviously, about constitutional crisis. We've got an executive branch simply saying we're not doing that anymore. And your point about competence, could you imagine, Maggie, if you or I were to show up in any court, federal court, state court, municipal court, and say, you know what, I don't know what, I'm not prepared to
go, the law.
I don't know about this. And when the judge looks at you or me, would not happen because we would be prepared, and you say, I'm not prepared. That is not a proper response. And it should also be underscored, these are people who are representing the people of the United States of America, right? It is a combination of this intentional flouting that you talked about and
yes.
incompetence.
Incompetence, lackeyism, willing to sell your integrity to, I don't know, curry favor with people that you think can do good things for you. I don't know what it is. But you don't show up in court for a temporary restraining order hearing and go, I can't talk about the merits. It's the actual thing that temporary restraining orders are supposed to interrogate, which is your likelihood to succeed on the merits. Here's another case. This is about grant conditions that the Trump administration attempted to place on states that receive a variety of federal grants. They basically said, cooperate with our ICE operations or else. The court entered an order back in September saying that basically this is ridiculous. Grant conditions have to be related to the purpose of the grant, and these ICE requirements have nothing to do with these various grants that are about like energy production, building the grid, educate, has nothing to do with ICE enforcement. And just this week, 3 days ago, that judge that entered that order originally in September granted a motion to enforce that judgment because the defendants, this is the judge's order, quote, have done precisely what the memorandum and order forbids, which is requiring plaintiff states to agree to assist in federal immigration enforcement or forgo the award of grants. Defendants' new approach is not a good faith effort to apply with the order. It is a, quote, ham-handed attempt to bully the states into making promises they have no obligation to make at the risk of losing critical disaster and other funding already appropriated by Congress.
core rule of law stuff. Core rule of law stuff being flouted. Shocking. Shocking in America.
Jim, we've got to do a show where it's just me and you. Absolutely. And we just talk about the law stuff.
There is a lot going on. It's a lot, my friend, is it not? But always good to be here and good to wrestle with these things.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you to each and every one of you. Don't go anywhere. I'm super excited. We are going to be joined by the former Assistant Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development under three prior presidents. It will be my honor to speak with Alejandra Castillo next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. It was a heist that could have come right out of a movie. Correspondent CBS's Elizabeth Palmer reports on a daring daytime robbery at the famed Louvre Museum in Paris.
Here's how the thieves broke in. On a hoist they'd parked at the backside of the museum. Dressed in fake uniforms, they broke a window and made straight for the sumptuous Apollo Room, where France's crown jewels are on display, including treasures that belonged to the Empress Eugenie, wife of Napoleon III. It took them all of 4 minutes to grab eight priceless pieces from the collection.
The Trump administration said today the U.S. military carried out another deadly strike on a boat in the Caribbean. CBS's Willie James Inman is following that.
It's the seventh known U.S. strike on alleged drug vessels since last month, which have killed over 30 people. The military actions are causing tensions between the U.S.